Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. We are thrilled that you're joining us for the 23rd episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So I am joined by outstanding producer, co-host Alex Goldberg. So Alex, when we recorded our last episode, the Bonucci to Milan deal wasn't official. We had faith in Di Marzio that he said since it's on its way to being done. We talked about it almost as if it was done. But now it's official. Juve sent out the posting with the transfer fee and all. So I wanted us to kind of have a last take on the deal. And let's start with yours. Now that it's finally done, what did you make of it?
I mean, I still can't believe it, you know, a few days after. But the fact that it's done and now Milan is continuing to make moves prior and after, it looks like. And, you know, Juventus has had a much more calm summer, you could say. David, this doesn't make me think that Juventus isn't still the favorite to win another Scudetto. It doesn't make me think that all of a sudden AC Milan is just so much better and the attention's just going to shift throughout Serie A immediately. But I think maybe 3-4 years from now, this could at least be the turning point. And that's not even a hot take. I mean, I definitely think with the activity that Milan has had in getting so many different types of players, we've talked about them, you know, ad nauseum on a lot of these episodes, but, you know, they acquired a captain. They didn't just acquire one of the best defenders in the world. They acquired a captain, which I think that's a big, bold move for the whole league right there. It's no longer a player leaving Juventus for another league where all the other teams in Serie A can celebrate because now Juventus is not as stacked. But no. This is a player, a very important player for Juventus moving to another Serie A team. So I think this could be the turning point that we'll look back on in a few years. And I also just, David, cannot wait for the next AC Milan-Juventus game because I think it's going to be a fiery, cagey match. And there'll just be so many new characters to study on Milan. And then, of course, all eyes will be on Bonucci. I can't wait. How do you take all of this deal in, David?
So I think you made a lot of really good points. And, you know, looking back at what we talked about on Thursday, you know, I said that we may look back at the match in Cardiff as it being the last night of the Juve dynasty, you know, under the Buffon era. And I think that might be a little bit premature. I agree with you. To me, they're still the favorite in Serie A. I'm not so sure, you know, they'll be as good in the Champions League because it's not only Bonucci, it's also Dani Alves. So, you know, you look at the other center backs on Juve. Obviously, Bonucci is a big loss, but let's put it this way. I can't think, except for Bayern, Munich, maybe another club that could lose a center back like Bonucci and not be completely devastated from it. The other wrinkle to it, too, is in the meantime, now De Sciglio looks to be on his way to Juve for $12 million. So it's kind of inevitable not to look at those deals together. But a lot has been made about the transfer fee of Bonucci. So let's look at that one in a vacuum. It looks like Juve is going to pay $12 million for De Sciglio. Bonucci is going to Juve for $40 million plus $2 million in bonuses. To me, it was no surprise that Juve put that $40 plus $2 million in bonuses in their official statement because that figure would match what Roma paid Fiorentina for Batistuta, which is the record for a player over 30. So, you know, there's a lot in the fee, but the player's age is always a big part of this. We interviewed Gab Marcotti in the second half of the podcast, and he gave some great insight on this. But I had a note to talk about this even before. So maybe I don't find the fee as outrageous as other people. I just think with a player over 30, it's a little bit tough. But I do think that when you look at it with the De Sciglio part, who has an expiring contract, Juve is essentially selling Bonucci $28 million plus De Sciglio. That's a lot of pressure on De Sciglio to do well. And I do have a couple of thoughts on that. I mean, look at Juve when they signed Pirlo. Everyone thought he was finished. When they hired Allegri, everyone thought he was an idiot that had ruined Milan and couldn't possibly do well at Juve. So the hope for Juve is that De Sciglio has a similar revival, if you will. And I know he wasn't as established as Pirlo, but De Sciglio already has 31 caps with Italy's national team, the senior squad. I thought he did well at the Euro under Conte. So Juve is banking on the fact that just like Pirlo and Allegri, they arrived with very little hype, that he kind of helps them justify even more the Bonucci deal. So I think you guys will really enjoy the take that we got from Marcotti on this as well later in the podcast. But before we get to that, as usual, we get your great Twitter questions that you can send in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And Alex, which ones did you pick today?
All right, David. Well, let's start with a player who had a great year last year in the Bundesliga. David, who has a better chance of signing Naby Keita? Is it Liverpool or Inter?
So great question. I want to put this at the top for a couple of reasons. So I did a little bit of digging on him, and I'm not a Bundesliga expert by any means. So my guess is most likely he's going to go to Liverpool, but odds are it won't be this season. His current club, RB Leipzig, says, you know, we're not selling him. Don't even bother. There's no price. But next year, there's an exit clause that becomes effective on his contract. A very famous agent intermediary, actually the Sciglio's agent, Branchini, was asked about this, and he said that as far as he knows, he's going to go to Liverpool, but it's really a matter of when. Might not be this season, it might be next. I know he's one of the big-name players that Inter has been linked to, but it looks like that won't be the one that arrives to Inter.
Okay, well, speaking of Inter, could Inter sign Arturo Vidal or Raja Nainggolan?
So those were the other two big names linked to Inter. And unfortunately for Inter fans, these are the two that I also don't think it's very likely. Now, Roma's president, Pallotta, basically announced that Nainggolan's extension is done. That's not entirely accurate, but I think that that's definitely going to happen. I have a feeling that extensions actually are going to be announced here in Boston during the tour. As far as Vidal, Bayern Munich is looking to extend him. That would have been a great signing for Inter, but I do think Inter is going to get some big names, but it doesn't look like it will be one of these two.
All right. David, what are the odds Anthony Martial would be included in a deal for Ivan Perisic?
So this caused all sort of controversy on Friday. Di Marzio had an update on this, and we tweeted about this. So Inter's Sabatini, the guy that oversees all their mercato, if you will, said that, look, you know, Manchester United wants Perisic. We're not able to meet an agreement on a price. Maybe we'll include some players in the deal. And one player that Sabatini has always liked that, of course, Martial, but the odds of this being in a deal for Perisic are very, very low. Just look at the players' valuations. Manchester United spent a fortune on Martial, who's still really, really young. You know, a lot of people think Inter's asking too much for Perisic. Even say that price of 50 million, around 50 million euros stands when you consider everything Martial's probably worth at least that much. So I don't think that's going to happen in that deal. Be interesting, though, to see if Manchester United decides to hold on Martial or do it on loan. But I don't think that'll be part of the Perisic deal. It's possible that Darmian goes in that deal to lower a little bit the price, although it seems like there's a lot of momentum for Manchester United wanting to keep Darmian as well.
All right. Well, while we're on Manchester United, would Man U be better off getting Keita Balde rather than Perisic?
So this was a good question, and the reason I included is in the past I've had people, Premier League fans, tell me, look, you know, these Italian clubs are so good, they sell us these players for huge fees, they replace them with a player at a fraction of the cost, and the player they replace them with is just as good, if not better. So today someone asked me, hey, shouldn't Manchester United just cut out the middleman if Inter wants Keita Balde? Shouldn't they just sign him? And look, you know, I love Keita Balde. I've talked about him on this podcast glowingly in the past. I just think in the short term, Perisic is such a better fit for Man United because of his versatility as a winger. You know, every time I talk about his defensive ability, I don't want people to assume that he's not good offensively. Far from it. But I think in the short term, Perisic is really perfect for Mourinho. I could see if, say, Keita Balde went to Man United, he'd be one, like Martial, someone that maybe struggles to get the playing time. So Inter's still heavily linked now to Kita Balde. He might join Juve next season, so that's certainly a player to watch. But in the short term, I certainly think Manchester United would be better off with Perisic.
David, why would Chelsea sell Nemanja Matic to Juventus after the Bianconeri are being so stubborn with Alexandro?
So I love these types of questions. So we talked about Bonucci and De Sciglio earlier. Like, to me, you have to kind of look at these deals separately. And look, you know, even when you hear stories about player swaps, like at the end of the day, clubs are always going to record them in the books as separate transactions. So the way I see it, after Bonucci and Dani Alves left, you've already lost two starters. I think there's much more urgency to keep Alexandro as a result. So, you know, Chelsea's been making some big offers for him. Juve's interested in Matic. I really would look at these completely separately, because also for Chelsea, you know, say he doesn't go to Juve and he leaves, odds are he'd be going to a Premier League team who would be competing with Chelsea. I know there's a lot of Chelsea fans that don't rate him. I think he's an excellent player. So maybe in a way, you know, you could say, well, you don't give us Sandro, we won't give you Matic, but the end result of that could be Matic going to a Premier League team. So I would just look at these separately. So Alex, while we're on the Chelsea one, we got a question on Aguero, and I want to stress, you know, nothing's been reported on the Marca site. I really don't know much about this potential deal. So I wanted to ask you, what was your reaction to Aguero being linked to Chelsea?
Well, when I very first saw it, you know, I didn't even look at it twice, because at this point, Chelsea is in the market for any striker, it feels, because the traction really is just not getting going after the whole Lukaku mess. But now that I think about it more, I mean, it doesn't make no sense, because if City is at all interested in Alexis Sanchez, maybe Aguero is being pushed out. Obviously, Manchester City has so many weapons on offense that even though Aguero is so loved by City, I could still see maybe him being pushed out. However, David, I just don't see him in a Chelsea kit. I would accept the player. He's still, you know, somewhat young, and he still has loads of talent. But I would rather Chelsea sign a player that's maybe 23, like Andrea Belotti, where I can know, all right, this is the number 9 for the next 6-7 years, and that wouldn't be the case in Aguero. Now, I will take him. I'd be very nervous about that front line, though, because with Eden Hazard, Aguero, and either Willian or Pedro, David, that's a very short front three. However, Aguero is actually very good in the air for a short player. Overall, though, I'm not taking it too seriously, and he actually just would not be my first choice. Let's move on to the next Twitter question. Which striker will Milan sign? Can they also sign Renato Sanchez from Bayern?
So at this point, look, with Milan, at this point, I don't put anything at all past them. I really thought after Andres Silva, who at the time seemed like a big transfer fee for Milan, that would be the main striker they signed this summer. But at this point, nothing can be put past them. Their sporting director basically said, we are going to get one out of Morata, Belotti, Aubameyang. I could see one of those three signings. A little bit different situations. For Morata, Real Madrid is asking for a huge 90 million euro. It sounds like he wants a huge contract. Morata had reservations in the past because of his allegiance to Juve, but I think he'd be a terrific addition. With Belotti, the thing is, yeah, he has this 100 million exit clause, and everyone says it is technically valid abroad, but they take that money from any club in Italy except for their crosstown rival, Juve. Milan also could add some players in the deal to make the valuation work, so it's not like Torino wants just cash. It would have to be a lot of cash, and then it would be a couple of players, and Milan has some players that have done well with Mihailovic on their squad. So to me, that's somewhat feasible. For Aubameyang, the good news for Milan is the transfer window in China is closed as of Friday. That seemed to be their biggest competition, but he also wants huge wages. So it'll be interesting to see if a Premier League club jumps in for him. And then there's the backup option, Kalinic at Fiorentina, who Montella seems to really like. So Kalinic is just waiting in the wings to see if one of those other three signs. Milan seems pretty optimistic they'll sign one of those three, and based on what they've done so far, you really can't put it past them. As far as Renato Sanchez goes, Bayern Munich, both Rummenigge and even Ancelotti basically said that he could join Milan on loan, a 2-year loan, maybe with an option to buy. And what a great addition that would be for them as well. That midfield's already vastly improved. I think it could be a little bit better, and he would really, really help them. So if you're a fan of any other team, start petitioning Milan to leave some players for your club to sign this summer, because they've really been on a roll.
Now, that would be an incredible signing, considering how much potential and how young Renato Sanchez is. All right, David, I'm wondering this next question myself. What would Antonio Conte have to say if Milan signs Alvaro Morata? Would you expect him to be upset?
So I'm going to tell you exactly what I expect Conte to say, but I'm going to say it in Italian. So, Alvaro Morata è un giocatore straordinario sotto tutti i punti di vista. Forse Abramovic non sa che il sottoscritto aveva provato a abbordare Morata alla Juve. E se non arriva al Chelsea saranno problemi seri. Grazie. So that's what Conte would say, long and short of it. He's always loved Morata, tried to bring him at Juve, and he wants to make sure that Abramovic is aware of how much he likes Morata. So that's what I expect Conte to say.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I have a lot of stress about this whole situation with Conte and Abramovic, but I'll leave that for later. David, last Twitter question. Is there really a chance Locatelli joins Juventus?
I have to be honest. The minute, and this was something that was reported on Di Marzio's site on Friday, and I don't doubt for one second that Juve would love to have Locatelli. You know, they have Pjanic, Khedira, Marchisio. They've really struck out with, like, younger midfielders. So it doesn't surprise me at all that Juve would be interested in Locatelli. But, you know, and I don't doubt that they've made attempts, but I felt like that was really just a way to rain on Milan's parade on Bonucci. It was kind of a way for Juve to say, okay, you took Bonucci, but don't look at it just in a vacuum. We might take Locatelli, and hey, we might also sign Donnarumma next season. So, you know, I guess for Locatelli, he sees Milan buying all these midfielders. In the short term, he wouldn't be that much better off. I don't think he would start at Juve either. I guess Juve could buy him and then loan him to a team for a year, but why wouldn't Milan just do that themselves? So I don't dispute the validity of the report. I'm sure it's there for a reason, but I have a feeling that was a little bit of PR to kind of soften the blow on Bonucci, but I could be wrong. So thank you all for the questions. Thank you all for the reviews. Your support is amazing. So I want to introduce the guest. You know, when we started this podcast, Gab Marcotti was at the top of the people that we wanted on. He also wanted us to get some podcasts under our belts before we had him on because he's such a great guest. So I want to give you, you know, his brief bio for those of you that don't know him. He's the senior writer for ESPN. Here in the U.S., he also works for Sports Illustrated. We've had Grant Wall, Ben Golliver on. It's a massive publication here. Gab is also the Corriere dello Sport correspondent in London. He's written a lot of great books. His most recent one is on Claudio Ranieri, Hail Claudio, the Man, the Manager, the Miracle. He also wrote Di Canio's autobiography, wrote a biography on Capello. The guy is amazing. You'll enjoy his opinions. I want to tell you very quickly my connections to Gab. He's the reason why I got to work at ESPN, which was always my dream because so many of my favorite writers are there. Gab and I, a few summers ago, the one where Vidal looked like he was going to Manchester United, got into a long Twitter conversation on Vidal, and classy act that he is. He then emailed me and said, you know, if you ever needed a favor, just ask. And I wasn't shy to ask about ESPN. So I'm very grateful to Gab. He's amazing, not just a great writer, but a great person. So I think you'll really enjoy this interview. Great. So as all of you know by now, my favorite part of the show is the interview. And today we are joined by an amazing guest. When we started working on the guest list for the podcast, Gabriele Marcotti was one of the dream guests that we had. And the timing's perfect with everything that's going on in Serie A, the upcoming International Champions Cup. So we're very excited to be joined by Gab to discuss about all these topics. So Gab, thank you so much for joining us on Calcioland today.
It's my pleasure.
So, Gabriela, in the past few days, we've had, I would say, probably the most shocking transfer of the summer. You know, I was just thinking, imagine if you knew someone that was in a coma for the past 2 years. They wake up and you let them know that, A, Donald Trump's now the president of the United States, and number two, Leonardo Bonucci left Juve to join Milan. That would be quite the awakening. So I wanted to get your initial reaction on Bonucci leaving the Serie A champions to join Milan, who is, you know, on their way up, but are not in the Champions League quite yet.
Well, I think it's one of those things where, you know, we're all shocked when it happens, and then we go back and we look at the warning signs and we realize that, you know, maybe we shouldn't have been shocked. Obviously, there was a breakdown in relationships. We knew that there'd been a breakdown. You know, and again, this isn't going to be a typical case of hindsight being 2020, right? But if you go back and you look at what we know about Juventus, is that they're not afraid about letting people go who aren't, in Italian we have this word, aziendalisti, you know, which means sort of who don't go along with the company line, right? We saw that with Antonio Conte, and we've seen it now with Leo Bonucci. When it came down to choosing between Bonucci and Max Allegri, they chose Allegri. I think that's pretty clear. The signs of tension were there. Obviously, there was a story, you know, last year when they had words on the pitch and Allegri was suspended. There was a story of of what happened post Cardiff, which I think also links into Dani Alves. I mean, if you think about it, after the end of the season he had, you know, and then all of a sudden, boom, he's gone. You know, I think that makes things pretty clear. And then obviously there was Bonucci's role in events in Cardiff at halftime as well, which incidentally, while Bonucci went out of his way to deny it, you know, the club didn't really confirm or deny. And I just think back to, you know, some of the people who reported it, like my friend Max Nerozzi at La Stampa, which again, La Stampa is owned by the Agnelli family, which people sometimes forget. And the abuse he got for reporting the story from some Juve fans who, you know, accused him of stirring up trouble. And I would also add to that the fact that, you know, right now Juve, I think, are operating under the principle that, you know, as good as a player is, when he reaches a certain age and we get a good enough offer, you know, we have an idea of what he's worth, we're prepared to let him go, especially if he wants to leave. And again, we saw that we saw that with Pogba, we saw that with Arturo Vidal, with Carlos Tevez. So, you know, again, the signs were all there. It's just that we didn't necessarily spot them.
Very interesting. And I like that you used that a word, aziendalisti, to describe players at Juve. You know, last week when we did our podcast, I went back to the interview Cassano gave about not wanting to join Juve because they like soldatini, good soldiers, and certainly players like Bonucci, Dani Alves, to a certain extent, Vidal, don't fit that prism. So if I totally agree with your analysis. What's interesting to me, though, is that Bonucci didn't leave Juve for the Premier League. We know Guardiola is one of his favorite players. We know Conte, of course, has close ties to him. But what did you make of him choosing Serie A over the Premier League? Of course, you know, it's widely reported he has family reasons for this as well, but what did you make of that development?
Well, it's interesting. This is always, and again, for people who aren't in our line of work, you know, sometimes they sort of struggle to come to grips with this. But people in football who we cover lie all the time. They lie and they spin. And part of your job is to figure out when people aren't telling you the truth, and figure out, or sometimes figure out when, you know, they're partly telling the truth, partly exaggerating, and whatnot. You know, pretty much both sides of the story are out there. There's a side of the story where Bonucci wanted to stay and was treated badly by Allegri, who, you know, sometimes has this slightly hysterical streak, and he could have gone abroad, but he didn't want to because, obviously, as you mentioned, for family reasons, and so he's, you know, going back to Milan. That's one version of events. That's obviously the Bonucci end. And then there's the Juve end where he started to make mistakes. He wasn't living up to his rep. It's not true that City and Chelsea wanted him. Those were just things that were put out by his agent, Rucci. There was never any real offer. The club had extended his contract. This was last year.
Yeah.
You know, and they show them all their loyalty, they show them all their love, but nobody's bigger than the club. And that's why he, you know, once they had to sell him in Italy, you know, Roma, not really an option. So yeah. Inter, obviously, why would he want to go there? So, boom, he's at Milan. You know, I don't know. Is the truth necessarily somewhere in between? Is it one side more on the other? I honestly don't know. It's possible that both versions are correct to some degree. It's one of those things that is really difficult, I think, from the outside. But what I do think is from Juve's perspective, when you look at the wages that Bonucci was on, when you look at what they're offering, I don't think it's a bad price for him. When you consider what's coming through behind them, you know, the fact that obviously you're going to get another season at least from Barzagli and Chiellini, maybe Benassia is there, and you've got Rugani coming through, and of course especially Caldara, who is a player who I personally really adore.
Yeah, Caldara was really impressive at the Euro. Excellent analysis, and I agree with you. I think there's the truth somewhere there in the middle. And the other thing is, you know, this is by no means the first huge player to leave Juve to go to Milan. We've seen Robby Baggio, Inzaghi in the 90s. So this, you know, it might be shocking now, but this isn't completely unprecedented. So the last question
here's,
I have...
Here's the interesting thing. We did a little segment on this on the show Sunday night. I kind of, you know, went through all the players who had moved between the two clubs in either direction.
Yeah.
The first high-profile one was a guy nobody would associate with either club, but that was actually Meazza, a long, long time ago, who joined Milan after suffering an injury with Inter and was never the same. But the interesting thing is, of the guys who moved clubs, Pirlo and Inzaghi are really the only two who were actually good, both for Milan and for Juventus. Everybody else was either poor at one and then better at the other, or the other way around. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Bonucci turns out.
Absolutely. So the last question I have on this topic, Gab, is a lot's been discussed about the price tag. So let's keep the Decilio part out of there today. The development looks like he's heading to Juve, but let's look at the Bonucci fee in a vacuum. So the criticism is that Juve didn't get enough of a return. The published fee was 40 million plus 2 million in bonuses. I have a feeling Juve posted it this way on their site because it matches pretty much the fee that Roma had paid Fiorentina for Battistuta, which was the most expensive transfer fee for a player 30 and over, and Bonucci recently turned 30. Now, of course, you look at the fees for players like Stones in the Premier League, obviously a younger player, but all things considered, how do you think Juve got enough of a return on Bonucci?
I mean, it's a little bit like when your house is on fire, you know, you're going to take what you can get, right? I don't think we can judge this. You know, this isn't like, say, Pogba a year ago, where I think Pogba would have been happy to stay if there had been no offer. You know, this was a situation where things had certainly broken down, and I also think if you look at the wages that Bonucci was offered by Milan, that's a really big bump. I mean, You know, obviously in Italy we quote numbers net. The number I saw was 6.5. That's right around 11 million euros a year. Another way to look at it from Milan's perspective is that if they are paying 42 million, if you're going to get 4 years out of him, which I think is reasonable, right? You're looking at 42 million plus 44 million. That's 86 million over 4 years. That's 21.5 million euros a year. You know, for a player who's not really going to have any resale value, given his age and the size of his contract. I mean, you know, that's an enormous amount of money. It's enormous commitment from Milan. And what that tells me is, you know, you're not going to be able to keep a player like that. When on top of that, he's had this major issue with the club and with the manager. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I think that's probably a fairly reasonable fee from Juve's perspective. And you know, the optics are funny because of course Kyle Walker moves on the same day.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, take a step back. You know,
look at it in the real world. Factor in wages and age
and
also availability of replacements, because the reality is Juve have, you know, even without Barzagli and Chiellini, they've got three exceptional center backs, I think, behind Barzagli and Chiellini. Plus, they're likely, or it's possible, that they'll move to a back four next year, so they're not going to need so many center backs. And all of a sudden, you know, I think this is pretty good.
Excellent. So let's change the topic slightly. And your analysis on Bonucci was fantastic. So I look at Juve. They were in the final in Cardiff. Going into the final, a lot of people felt they had a good chance to win. Dani Alves is gone. He helped them a lot get to the final. Bonucci is now gone as well. Real Madrid looks vastly reinforced. We're seeing Paris Saint-Germain really try to invest a lot. Do you think Juve missed their best chance to win the Champions League with their current core? And granted, that's changed quite a bit. So let's just say with Buffon.
I mean, they certainly had the chance, but then we were kind of reminded just how good Real Madrid are. But I mean, I don't see why Juve couldn't reload. You know, you assume that Dybala is going to be better next year. You assume that, you know, Alexandro is going to be as good, if not better, next year. I expect to get more from Pjanic next season. And then it's a question of, you know, the newcomers and to what degree can the other players maintain their level. I almost feel like last season, Allegri had a little bit less flexibility because of, you know, the whole BBC thing. I think he often felt that he had to play those three guys and whatever. You know, I think next year we'll see a back three when it's appropriate. We'll see a back four when it's appropriate. Dybala has another level to which he can go. And, you know, and if he steps up. And also another guy I think a lot of people have forgotten, but I think you can really use and benefit from, is Claudio Marchisio. You know, I want to see a Marchisio that goes through preseason training and that becomes the dominant force again that he was a couple years ago before his injuries. You know, then I think they'll be in the mix. Is their lineup as good as Real Madrid's or even Barcelona's or City or whatever? No, it's not. I don't think so. But, you know, it's not about your lineup. It's about how you play and how good a team you are as a team. And I think in that regard, you are exceptionally well-drilled.
Excellent. So let's move to the other team involved in the Bonucci trade. And they've absolutely dominated the summer transfer window. So when Fasson and Mirabelli arrived at Milan, they said their goal was to assemble the team quickly because they had the Europa League coming and they wanted to give Montella, you know, the squad ready for the Ritiro. And they've definitely kept their word that way. They've essentially brought in a brand new starting lineup with few exceptions. What do you make of their summer moves? And realistically, where do you think Milan can finish in the standings next season?
I think it's been very impressive. I love some of the signings. Obviously, I mean, Bonucci is going to be a big boost. Cassie, Conte. It's really impressive what they've put together. If they can land a top center forward, and I think the issue with Bacca is that, you know, other than scoring goals, he doesn't really do much. And I think in a Montella system, to get the best out of it, you know, you need somebody who contributes more. Then I think they can certainly challenge Juve for the title. There's no question about that. I'd also underscore, though, that in some ways, the real progress that Milan made, you know, came before even Mirabelli and Fassone officially came on board. And that was last season when they started playing the kids, guys like Calabria, Locatelli, you know, there's still a core of very young players there who I think, you know, can improve in addition to all the newcomers. I also think, you know, we've all enjoyed, you know, writing, you know, making Milan formations and so on. I'm not so sure it's all going to pan out like that. I mean, Andre Silva is still very young. And rather untested. Çalhanoğlu's come from a difficult period. You know, some of these guys, I think, are gambles. But overall, though, to be able to move like that is really impressive.
Absolutely. So let's talk about Milan's crosstown rivals, Inter. So I think I've been guilty of this in the past. Last season, Inter outspent Juve net of sales considerably on the transfer market. Now, how those moves panned out is a whole other story, but Suning certainly showed a lot of financial strength. And the other part of the storyline was, like, we don't know who these new Milan owners are. They took this loan from Elliott. So there was a lot of uncertainty with them. And so far we've seen Milan dominate the transfer window, while Inter has been relatively quiet aside from Borja Valero and Skriniar. What do you make of Inter? And do you think they have a lot of pressure now to do well on the transfer market based on Spalletti's recent statements and, of course, what Milan's done so far?
So when it comes to Inter, I thought they did really badly in the transfer market last year. I'm in two minds about Mancini. I'm biased here. I loved him as a player. I think as a manager and as a coach, he showed that he's really creative and flexible. But what he should not be doing is he should not be operating in the transfer market, because that is definitely not his strength. And his Inter team, I think, generally played badly for the whole time that he was there. And then, you know, you dump him, you throw De Boer in at the deep end, the guy totally unprepared for Italian football, wrong set of players. You know, he wasn't great. I think the environment around him wasn't great. And then Pioli comes in, and I thought there was a bounce under Pioli, and I thought. But then again, we got into this whole thing where, you know, and it's a two-sided thing. If you remember early on Mancini, like, they would win games, but they would be horrible. I mean, absolutely horrible. Because they, you know, they concede 10 chances, and then Icardi would do something and score, and, you know, people in the media would come out with nonsense like, well, you know, if you can play badly and win, it shows that you really are a great team. And no, it's not. It just shows that you've been lucky. You know, the teams that win tend to play well. And with Pioli, it was kind of the opposite. He had this run with the derby and whatnot, where they had three or four games where I thought they really deserved to win, and they played bad, but they didn't get points. They didn't get the win anyway. And then the bottom fell out, and again, Inter being, you know, a self-destructive basket case for most of its history, then all of a sudden there was no faith in Pioli, and it all fell apart. With Spalletti, I don't think that's going to happen. I think, you know, Spalletti's not going to put up with the nonsense. If things don't go Spalletti's way, he's going to walk out. You know, Spalletti, I have a friend who worked with him when he was at Zenit, and he said that, you know, Spalletti kind of became like, if you read the book Heart of Darkness, Joseph Conrad, he's like Mr. Kurtz. You know, it's like he's gone into the wilderness and he's the boss, you know, and if it doesn't work out for him, he's just going to walk away and he's going to disappear back into the wilderness. And I think maybe that's what Inter need at this stage. I think it's a poorly assorted team. It's less of an issue because I think Spalletti, again, is a very resourceful and creative player. He'll be able to coach, rather. He'll be able to put out a decent lineup, even if they don't make any more signings. But clearly, I think Inter are paying the price for, you know, for the last couple of seasons and the stuff that went on there.
So speaking of Spalletti, let's take a look at his former club, Roma, who's going through a major transformation. So we've seen Totti leave, a few Rudiger leave as well, Salah at Liverpool. What do you make of all the changes at Roma? Do you think under Monchi they can have a new revival? And do you think Roma will ever get to the point where they're able to keep their best players? Or do you think simply the Monchi hire was basically saying, we're not even going to try to keep our best players. This is why we have this guy that will always help us find the next champion.
All right, well, there's one thing which we need to come out and say, and this applies to Roma, it applies to Inter, it will apply to Milan. You know, these clubs are operating under financial fair play, under financial fair play voluntary agreement settlement, right? So they breach financial fair play requirements, and it's inevitable that they do. Milan will breach them too, not because they're bad, but because, you know, it's the only way that they can, you know, bring the team up to the standard that they want quickly, and that's fine. And UEFA allows you to do that, but then you have to meet certain milestones after that. And those involve limits on your net spend, limits on your squad size, and so on. So we need to bear this in mind when discussing Inter, who Inter need to break even in their budget this year. Roma, I think, need to break even as well. Or anyway, it's very interesting. It's online. It's on the UEFA website. You can find the settlement. So it's not just a case of them not hanging on to their best players because they don't want to, or they don't like Rudiger anymore, or they're trying to play some kind of money ball. It, you know, it's a case that, you know, they need to bring this money in somehow. I think Monchi is a tremendous signing. I mean, you look at his work in Seville, for me, and if you judge over time and not get fixated on one or two, you know, on one player that might have gotten wrong, I think, you know, Monchi, Franco Baldini, you know, guys like that bring real added value to a club and are among some of the best of the world at what they do. So I think it's a smart pickup, but it's going to put them in a strong position. Now, though, I think it's a question of kicking on. I think it's hugely important. Nainggolan's extension, which I think was due to happen today or is going to happen very soon. Apparently, they've reached a deal. You know, to maintain that stability in that midfield, and then they still have Dzeko, and they have options. And you know, I think they're probably right around, you know, the second or third best team in Serie A, and to me, they look like a lock to finish in the top four again. And I think the question marks are going to be more regarding other teams.
So speaking of another team, and one that I think isn't getting a lot of hype because they've really kept what they have. To me, one of the winners of the Bonucci transfer is Napoli, because I think they were very well positioned to have a strong season. They have a lot of young players who are going to be better. They've locked up Mertens and Insigne. It looks like they hold on to Koulibaly. Do you think Napoli has a legitimate chance at the Scudetto this season, or do you think they'll have to wait a little bit longer?
So to me, the question mark there, and I like the whole concept of, you know, you keep all your pieces together and you grow better in chemistry or whatever. But I think we also need to ask ourselves, is Dries Mertens, do we believe he's going to have the same season next year that he had this year? Or do we believe that that was just, you know, some sort of crazy outlier? And the answer to me is, I don't know. I mean, when you're operating at a certain level for the first 10 years of your professional career, and then all of a sudden, you know, you become, you know, Diego Armando Mertens, did you just get really, really lucky for a long, long time, or are you just a beneficiary of a system? And if you're the beneficiary of a system, let's not forget, you know, this system wasn't built for him. The system was built originally for Milik and Gagliardini and whatnot. And then it was almost by, you know, if Arkadiusz Milik doesn't get hurt, you know, Dries Mertens stays on the wing, and we have a whole totally different conversation. And that's with Maurizio Sarri, who I think most people agree, you know, may well be possibly the best coach in Serie A, the best tactical coach anyway. So I don't know. I hope Napoli remain competitive. I don't know that adding players would have necessarily made them better. I like, you know, some of the younger players that they have. I think they will be better. But to me, you know, I have to put a lot of faith in Sarri that he knows what he's doing, and that he somehow analyzed it and is convinced that, you know, Mertens can perform at or around to the level he was at last season.
Interesting. So let's pivot to an event that's going to take place here in the United States. I know you're traveling here to work on the International Champions Cup. We've had Charlie Stilettano on the show a while back to talk about this tournament. So tell us what you think fans can expect going to this tournament. There's a big game here in Boston, Juve-Roma, then Juve is playing Barcelona in New York. We have El Clasico in Madrid, as well as other games. But what do you think a fan can expect if they attend one of these games?
Well, I mean, I've been going to ICC games and the predecessors, Charlie also organized, for a bunch of years. And, you know, it's remarkable the turnout. And I love just sort of hanging beforehand and just talking to the fans. There are a lot of very knowledgeable, very passionate fans in the U.S. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, here in England where I live, people get stiffy. You know, like, oh, look, you know, oh, those silly fans in North America and Asia, don't they realize that, you know, these are summer friendlies and everybody's going at half pace? And, you know, I'm like, yeah, they do realize that, you know, but they still want to be a part of it. And, you know, it doesn't change the fact that this is an opportunity to see the stars that, you know, you normally, you know, get to see 3 inches tall, or maybe taller, depending on the size of your TV. And now you get to see them, in person. And, you know, obviously it's preseason. So it is what it is, but it's a tremendous show. It's a tremendous, chance, I think, to go and engage with the clubs you support, to see other clubs. They're coming to you. So yeah, I really enjoy it from a media perspective. Everybody's more relaxed, so you get a lot more access. There's a lot of people around. It's a great chance to do some reporting. So I look forward to it. I mean, we're going to be in Orlando. We're going to be spending some time with Tottenham at the end of this week. In fact, we're going to do the show from there. And I'm going to catch Juve and Barcelona at Giant Stadium. Then I'm going to come up. I'm actually doing an event in Boston on Sunday with a bunch of ex-players. I think Maldini is going to be there, David Trezeguet. It's a place called the Banshee Bar. We're going to be watching the Manchester Derby on television. So if you're in Boston, come out to that. Then it's going to be down to Miami for a Clasico. And, you know, it doesn't get much bigger than Leon Cristiano. So no, I think, you know, people are aware of what it is. Nobody's mistaking this for the Champions League final, but it doesn't matter. It's I think it's a great time to be had if you can make it out.
Absolutely. So let's finish on this, Gab. One of the things we do on our podcast is we have a lot of aspiring journalists, the bloggers, YouTube channel owners, and they're always looking for tips on how to improve their up-and-coming career. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to writing about football in English, you're really at the pinnacle. But there's been a lot of changes in journalism in the past few years. You know, obviously not just newspapers, but look at Fox Sports now, getting out of articles altogether, all going to just video. Where do you see in general journalism going in the next few years? And what have you done to adapt to all the changes?
I think, you know, in the example you cited, there's probably, you know, some distinction to be made between, you know, journalism in the sense of reporting in and breaking news, which is often a very unglamorous task and involves, you know, building sources, working them on the phones. You know that from your relationship with one of the very best in the business, in Gianluca Di Marzio. I was at the wedding of a mutual friend, an agent, a couple of years ago, and he was supposedly off, but you know,
he couldn't get off that phone at all, huh?
No. He spent the entire time on the phone. So that's one aspect of it, and I think to some degree that's gonna stay the same. You know, people want to know what's happening and what could happening and what could be happening. So that part's still going to be there. Now, what medium that's going to be delivered in, I honestly don't know. Used to be you'd wait till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning for the next day's edition. Obviously, that's all gone out the window now. So who knows? In terms of providing analysis and debate, I think that's grown. I think, you know, I don't know that people need to read, like, sort of match reports, for example, because people will have watched games or themselves or caught the highlights or whatever. I think what they want is analysis. You know, why did this happen? What are the implications going forward? You know, we try to provide that at on ESPN FC, both on the TV show and then on the website. I think that is a big part. I think what's important there, though, is that, you know, you got to do your homework. I think people can see through that. It's not just a question of, you know, oh, look, that guy was a great player. You know, let's put him in front of a camera. I think people need to do their people need to stay up to date with what's going on. They need to do their homework when discussing transfers. They need to understand, you know, what the background to it is. They have to find the right sources and so on, speak in an informed way. I think another aspect that's not going to go away, but also is going to still be there, but maybe in a different form, is feature writing. You know, the opportunity to kind of find these great stories, do some great storytelling. And that's something that is increasingly more difficult to do because clubs, you know, regulate access and whatnot. But I also think there is an appetite for that when it's done properly. So, I mean, to answer your question, it's evolving. We don't quite know, you know, what's gonna work, what's gonna be commercially viable. But I think those three sort of core elements, you know, reporting and breaking news, intelligent analysis and storytelling, I think those elements will remain.
Fantastic. So, Gab, the last question that I have, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us today, is what advice would you give to all our up-and-coming bloggers, writers who are looking to become the next Gab Marcotti when they grow up?
Wow. I mean, I get asked this quite a bit. So there are certain practical things that you can do. I think it helps tremendously if you speak at least two languages. That, I think, going forward, that's really going to be non-negotiable as a starting point. And if if you're in the U.S., then obviously you're talking about, I think, English and Spanish. I think you need to realize that if you want to advance professionally, you're going to need to stand out. So, you know, any schmo with a television can write an opinion piece on, you know, how Dani Ceballos will do at Real Madrid, or whether Real Madrid should sell Morata and go for Mbappe, right? The problem is, one, you know, anybody can do that, but precisely because anybody can do that, I don't know that there's a demand for that, because there's going to be thousands of other people who could do that, and then it comes down to, you know, who can write it in the most informed way, or who could write it in the most beautiful way. So if you're going to write stories like that are very mainstream, you have to have an edge, you have to have an angle, you have to have access to information or analysis, or figure out a way to get it, or write so beautifully that, you know, nobody's going to say no to you. And that's why I think it's important to look at other angles and really to put in the work reporting, talking to people. You know, you can talk to agents, you can talk to ex-players, you can talk to managers, especially when they're out of work. You can talk to club officials. You know, there's a whole background to this. You know, people sometimes think that, you know, when we go on television or whatever, you know, we're just kind of flipping on a camera and appearing in front of it. No, there's all this time that we spend before that on the phone, talking to people, sharing information. And really, I think that's what provides an edge, unless you happen to be that, you know, 0.001% where your writing or your talking is just so beautiful and so entertaining and so compelling that, you know, it doesn't really matter what you say because you say it so beautifully. But I think people like that are really in the minority. So you have to put in the legwork. And the one other thing I would say is, you know, have a dialogue with your audience. I mean, I'm on Twitter. You know, as long as people are civil, I have time, I'll generally happily engage. And you know, you also get to know your audience better. And you get to serve them better as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, but can't thank you enough. Your insight was terrific, not only on Serie A, but on journalism. And I hope to see you in Boston at the event over the weekend. So thanks so much for coming on.
Sounds good, man. Look forward to it.